Welcome to St. Augustine this evening. I am in a different chair. This will be a different kind of interview tonight. I feel shorter because I'm in Pete Melfi's chair, and the camera had to be changed, what, Amanda, about a foot taller?
Yeah.
It's a foot taller. So, Pete, you're going to have to adjust that in the morning, you and Clay. A very special guest tonight, longtime friend and current school board member is with us and a current candidate, and so we're going to go through a candidate interview with her. But before we do that, we got to make a little bit of money, and so we're going to go through our sponsors, and then we'll get to a really fun interview and session with our guest. So, Hebert Kresge & Associates, they're a full-service local CPA firm with a team of skilled professionals dedicated to providing top levels of service in the areas of tax compliance, planning for businesses, estates, individuals, trusts. They can also do audits, reviews, and accounting services, business evaluations, forensic analysis, and litigation support. You can reach Billy and Ken over at Hebert Kresge at 904-460-0747 or at HebertKreskeCPA.com. Great folks. They do an amazing job. Really, really good. Give them a call. And right now they're not that busy because they're like almost out of complete tax season. I'm just kidding. They're always busy. But give them a call. Also, the team at South State Bank is a group of bankers you can count on. Their approach to building long-term relationships with their customers is the best in the business. If you're looking for a banking relationship that you can depend on, check out South State Bank. They've got three locations to serve you, one on State Road 312, one on State Road 16, and my favorite, the branch over at the beach. Or you can visit their website at southstatebank.com. They are a member of the FDIC. And Carmelo's Pizzeria, locally owned and operated by the Tringale family and voted best pizza for forever in St. Augustine. They serve a great New York-style brick oven pizza. They also have salad, subs, wings, and so much more. The staff is great down there. It's so nice when you go eat there or you just pick up. They offer dine-in takeout delivery through both Bite Squad and Grubhub. So give all of our sponsors an opportunity. They're great, great folks. And speaking of great folks, we have Bev Slatt with us tonight.
Hi, Mike.
Welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here and glad that you're able to sit down with us. So that everyone knows, you and I have been friends for a long time.
We have.
I am going to ask you the same questions that Pete Melfi has asked all the other school board candidates.
Okay.
So that we can actually try to be fair in this. And then Pete will take this segment of the show and drop it into his app so that people can go watch. That's part of the reason I'm in Pete's chair and you're in the chair that all the candidates have been in so that it all looks the same.
Okay.
So we're just trying to probably in my overcaution of trying to be fair to do that. So first question, how long have you lived in St. Johns County?
Ooh, I've been here a while. 43 years.
43 years.
I have.
Have you been, you represent the northwest part of the county in District 1.
I do.
And you've done that for?
20 years. This is my 20th year.
Okay. And so the when you moved in the northwest, it had to be a lot different than what it is now.
We lived right on State Road 13, and had I chosen to, I could have taken my rocking chair and put it in the middle of the road and read my book all afternoon and never moved.
Yes.
It's different now.
It is slightly different. Some of our questions will eventually get to that around those things. So when you first decided to run 20 years ago, what was it that you made you want to run for school board?
Well, I took a look at, I had followed my children to school. I was a consummate volunteer, and I also was a long-term substitute teacher. And I took a look around, and our schools were okay. They were adequate, but they were kind of in the middle of the state achievement-wise. And I thought, we can do better. We can do better. And I had a friend who agreed with me, and her kids were a little older than mine. So she ran first and served two terms, and then I ran in 2002. With the goal of raising the achievement of our students in St. Johns County.
And you did that. I mean, since St. Johns County for a long time was ranked number one.
14 years.
Yes. So what is it that makes you want to run again?
I want a capstone last 4 years. I want to be able to solidify the success that we've developed here in St. Johns County, and I want to make sure that we have the right people in the right seats on the bus to have success of our kids outlive me. Mm-hmm. So it's important to me.
Right. And what are the top three issues that parents are concerned about right now?
Ooh, right now?
Big parental involvement year.
Yes, so we do.
What are the top three issues?
Well, I think probably at the top of the list is overgrowth. So many kids in our schools. I think there's been a lot of concern about some of the materials in our libraries. I guess those are really the big two. But I think, too, just they're really concerned about retaining our fine staff that we have. They're worried about teacher retention and having a quality staff for their kids.
So one of the questions I was going to ask on my own, right, along with this overcrowding that you brought up with later, the development, how many schools were in your district in 2002?
In my district.
Compared to what's in your district now? I mean, because most of the growth in new schools have been in that northern part of the county. And I know you only represent the western side, but that's where most of our growth has been.
Right, exactly. When I was first elected, there were three, because Bartram Trail had just opened. There were four. Julington Creek, Cunningham Creek, Switzerland Point, and Bartram Trail. There were four. Now, they're in my district. That just shrunk one more time. There are nine. But before the redistricting, there were 11. And before that, there were 14. So, you know, each time the last two redistricting cycles, my district has been the largest in the county population-wise. So it's had to shrink. But even though it shrunk twice, it's still the largest district in the county. So
yeah, and that's where, you know, if you are an old-time St. John's County resident like me, you've watched all of that growth in that area. And I agree with you, 20-some years ago, 30 years ago when I came home from college, I mean, you could drive down two-lane roads all over the place.
Oh, yeah, so. Or dirt.
Yes, yes. All right, so if you're elected, what are the areas that you want to focus on for your district?
Well, for the whole county, I mean, not just mine, but for the whole county, but in particular mine, I agree with parents. I think we need to work really, really hard to hire the best and to retain them. I think that is a major obstacle that we're facing right now, and there are multiple reasons for it. One of them is that colleges of education aren't turning out that many education graduates anymore, and I think the reason behind that is it's not the most stellar paying job of the whole earth. And it also, with the way laws have changed, both federal and state, it's kind of a difficult job right now. So I think sometimes young people don't want to go into that field for that reason. But the ones that do, they have such a passion for educating kids and really helping them to grow academically and really helping them to be successful, that it's a joy to work with those people. So it's important to me that we find those very ones who really, really care about kids and really care about their success and retain them.
Well, and that's our next question. Your answers are leading into the next. So what is the one thing that the teachers need the most in St. John's County right now?
Now, most people would tell you money, and I think that's very important. We constantly work to try to raise the pay for our teachers as best we can. Right now we have a little bit of a glitch because the governor, in his zeal to raise beginning teacher pay, which we're all about, has created a situation where that beginning teachers don't make that much less than people with a lot of experience. So we're working hard to create that separation again so that our veteran teachers are recognized and rewarded. But I think, really, pay is something, but working conditions is more. Sometimes we struggle because in the United States of America, we educate every child that comes to us. And that means kids with a lot of problems sometimes. And it's difficult to have a classroom full of kids, and maybe you have some very, very bright kids, and you have some kids that struggle, and you have some kids with emotional issues that disrupt the whole class. It's difficult to manage all of that. So I think it's a struggle sometimes for our teachers.
Are the teachers seeing more kids with IEPs?
Yes, absolutely. They are.
Which are
individual education plans.
Which the teachers have to adhere to.
Yes.
They're set up in the best interest of the child, mm-hmm. with the parents and the teachers, and But then that's a lot of extra requirements, both for the child that's going through that and the teacher, where they're supposed to be and how many minutes. So
exactly. And not just that, but just the accommodations that you make for those children. And then that bleeds over and affects all the rest of the kids in the class. So,
School safety. At the end of last year, do you think that parents felt like their kids were safe? And what can be improved in St. John's County, if anything?
Well, I think we've done really, I'm proud of where we are with safety. We have a sheriff's deputy or a policeman in every one of our schools. Last year, we had a few schools, we didn't have enough personnel, so we had a few security officers, but now this year we have a law enforcement officer in on each of our campuses, and some of our big campuses, some of our big high schools, we have more than one. That's very helpful and very effective. We've worked really hard on our facilities to harden them, and by that I mean making sure that we have perimeter fences, making sure that we keep our classroom doors locked, making sure that that any entry point, any obvious entry point is hardened down so that people can't enter our campuses. We also, this year, and you know, I think maybe all parents don't know this, we purchased a new system. It's a little card that goes on their lanyard with their, you know, their ID. And if anything happens on a particular campus, the teacher or the custodian or the para, whoever, because all employees have them, is able to activate that card and send out an alert, which goes directly to the sheriff's department. The sheriff's department can then see exactly where the problem is and respond to that. And it goes directly to administration, and they can call a lockdown just immediately.
So is the sheriff's department connected to the closed circuit TV or the cameras on
yes.
campus?
Yes. And it's the way it's matured over time, it's not just some hot spots, but rather they can see almost every nook and cranny on the campus. So they know when they arrive on campus, okay, I need to go to D Wing instead of having to try to figure it out once they get there.
Which I think is so important just because of what we're dealing with today as a society.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Chief
yes.
Hardwick, I think, has done a great job in training. I'm involved out at St. Joe. They do training out there all the time as well. And that campus was built in the early 80s. And it doesn't follow any of how you would build a campus today in the sense it's just a big, wide open campus.
Well, that's similar to Nice High School with mm-hmm. its pods. And it's just, I mean, that thing was a bear to mm-hmm. secure, but we've worked hard and gotten there with it.
Yeah, that was another big sprawling yeah. all over the place and not one huge building with a few entrances.
There exactly.
A lot of places.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think we have an adequate plan for growth as far as building for new schools is concerned? And do you think there's anything in the plan for growth that can be improved on?
That's an interesting question. Because of how quickly the growth is coming, not so much, we know that X development is going to bring Y numbers of houses, but nobody can predict how quickly they'll come. And that's been our biggest challenge, because you plan for it and you expect the homes to come at a reasonable pace, but then all at once they just come explode, and they're just so many so quickly. And so many of them are filled with people with children who then fill our schools. We have not reached a place where we have gotten even, let alone ahead of that growth. We're in process now of building 3 new K-8 schools to deal with it, but we need probably 4 or 5 more schools right behind it. And that's very, very difficult, because you don't maybe have the land you need, or you don't have certainly adequate funding to, because you only have so much borrowing capacity, and, you know, it's difficult.
So the school board was successful in lobbying for and the voters giving additional sales tax revenue.
Yes.
But you've been up against one of the worst inflationary periods we've had in our country, where construction costs are skyrocketing. And my guess is if you built a school in 2019, it's probably almost double what it was the cost-wise in mm-hmm. 3 years later. So how is that hampering construction.
Well, this particular year, we really had to face that head on. Not only what you described, but also supply chain. You know, it's difficult to get the stuff that you need and labor. So we plan to build a K-8 school in the Shearwater development. We put it out to bid. It came in $19 million more than the one we had built the year before. Mm-hmm. So we just had to back up. So we decided, rather than build it and open it in 2023 when we had planned, we decided to give a little more time, hoping that the the construction people could give us a better price because they'd have more lead time. And we decided, since we're going to do that anyway, and since we're going to have to borrow money anyway, we'll go ahead and we'll borrow enough to build three. Mm-hmm. To try to mitigate this growth that we're seeing both in the northwest part of the county and in the northeast.
So one of the other comments that you hear is you'll open a brand new school, and before the school's open, you've got portables at the school. So how are you trying to address that?
Well, that's a conundrum always, and mainly because of how fast people are coming. You think you have the right formula, you think you have the right read on it, how quickly that they will come, but then all at once there's a big explosion of people buying homes and moving into them. So we just have to do the best we can. We did in the spring, we did a very painful rezoning where we tried to normalize the populations at across schools as much as possible. And nobody ever likes rezoning, but when you're not moving somebody into a brand new school, but rather you're just moving them to another school to alleviate overcrowding, that was especially difficult.
And I have to imagine those are difficult things to do.
Oh, I tell people all the time, because zoning is the hardest thing a school board ever does.
Yeah, I would imagine that's just because there's times you have neighborhoods that have always been in a certain school and mm-hmm. now they're in another school, and it just, I would imagine that's not a lot of fun. Is there anything you think the school board can do to kind of improve on planning for growth? I go back and I look at the population of St. John's County in the 1950s was 25,000 people. Half of them lived in the city, right? And now we're, I think, over 300,000. Mm-hmm. So it's been an incredible growth, and a lot of that has been in the last 10 to 15 years. So what's the school board's, how do you guys do long-range planning on that?
We have a planning department, okay. And Nicole Cubbage heads that up, and she does a masterful job of crunching those numbers and looking and trying to predict what's going to happen when. I had a conversation with her just this day. Sometimes, you know, you try to guess which development's going to take off before another, and sometimes you're wrong, and then that puts you looking like that you're not planning, but that's not the truth. So she does a lot of careful analysis of how many homes are going to come, and she has this complex formula that she uses that I learned all about this afternoon. I've always been confused by the thing that the county helps her with to determine an estimate of how many kids will be in each home. But when they come so quickly, it's real difficult. Beach Walk is a good example, that development where we just built Beachside High School. Mm-hmm. We did not expect it to explode over the summer like it did, and it didn't put any pressure on the high school because we've got capacity, but we had rezoned those kids to Liberty Pines Academy, and now we have a lot of kids at Liberty Pines Academy and not so many at Landrum Middle School in Ocean Palms. So mm-hmm. you just have to react to it and adapt.
Well, and some of it is you don't know which subdivisions are going to take off.
That's it.
Right?
I mean,
so you have, and then we've had explosive growth because, in my opinion, Florida was open.
Yes,
I agree. The schools were open before most schools in the country reopened. And so I think some parents said, I'm moving to that location. And then if you begin to look around Florida and you want to find some place where things are new and it's not South Florida and it's not Central Florida, you're going to gravitate towards the Northern Florida area. And St. John's County is one of the better places to be.
Well, I'll tell you, it's even more, it drills down even more than that, because people these days really, really do their homework. And people will call us from Nevada or New Jersey or somewhere, and they've done their research. We want to come to St. John's County. It's the number one county in the state of Florida, and we want to come to Florida because it's open, and here we come. And, you know, so, and they drill down to the very school that they want, and maybe sometimes even the very teacher. They do their homework. It's interesting.
But it's much easier to do that with the internet today.
Exactly.
Than it was 30
exactly.
years ago, right? So, yeah, it's a, all right. What do you see as the major issues or issue facing St. John's County School District? What do you think is going to be some of the biggest obstacles if you're reelected that you're going to have to deal with?
I think that growth is the biggest one, because we've got to find a way to keep up with it and allow our children to be in schools that are a reasonable size. I don't want to have a 4,000-seat high school. I don't want that, because we know that kids stay engaged if they have adults that they can connect to, if they have extracurricular activities that they participate in. When you have a huge high school and maybe they want to play football or baseball, well, there are only so many slots and there's not enough capacity for them. So we like to keep our high schools in the 2,000 range if we can, but that's difficult in these days.
And yeah, I grew up in St. John's County. St. Augustine High School.
Mm-hmm. The high school.
The only one. Hastings High School, which has been closed.
For a long time.
In St. Joe. I mean, that was the only schools in the entire county. So a question about St. Augustine High. Any plans to renovate St. Augustine High?
We're doing that systematically. We did a lot of work there this summer. And it's just like a ongoing plan to just improve it along the way. So,
I mean, I look at that as, the school opened in 59 or 60.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 60 years old, and all the other high schools are much, much newer, especially the ones that are. So I'm glad that that the high school's getting some renovations.
Right. You know, we have several schools that are like Arby Hunt's almost 60 years old. Julington mm-hmm. Creek is celebrating 50 years this year.
Yes.
And we have several schools like that. But I am so proud of the fact that we stay up with our maintenance. We don't have deferred maintenance, as I see happening across the state. Because once you defer it, it takes forever to bring it back up to speed. So
yeah, I found my grandmother passed away a couple years ago. And we were going through her belongings and found her high school diploma, which was signed by Evelyn Hamblin.
Oh, wow.
And Cruikshank. Right? Neither one was a school, right, at the time. You're like, they were probably, you started thinking about what schools would have been around at that time.
Exactly.
To go to. So, yeah. So what changes would you like to see made or should be made at the state and local level regarding public education?
I think that at the state level, I think we're fortunate that Governor DeSantis has put a lot of emphasis on education. I think we're fortunate that Manny Diaz is our Commissioner of Education now, because he was a teacher, he was a principal, and he served on the Education Committee in the legislature, so he kind of understands the full gamut of all that. And so when legislators get excited and want to bring forth something, he can sometimes say, well, these are the ramifications of that kind of a decision. So mitigate some things that need mitigating. So,
well, and that's always I laugh about this in our area. We're more of a Republican stronghold.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody you talk to has that whatever office wants limited government. But you always at the same time have the city and the county complaining that the state's telling them what to do, and the state complaining that the federal government's telling them what to do. But they're all conservative Republicans when you talk to them individually. So are there things that you'd like to see changed at the state level that would make it easier for St. John's County schools?
Well, as many regulations as we can remove, the better. It's just easier and, I believe, more innovative. Just like we have charter schools and we take away regulations for them so that they can be innovative and do great things. Public schools, traditional public schools, charter schools are public, need that same kind of freedom. The ability to pivot and to do the best thing for kids without so many restrictions. By the same token, I think my husband used to talk about when you're raising kids and you need sideboards on the truck to kind of keep them, you know, mm-hmm. until they get to a certain place, and then you can take those sideboards off. But I think we all of us need sideboards, because every county in the state of Florida is not the same. And I think to keep the quality of education across the state, we need some regulation. But I think to give freedom to some of those counties that are really excelling, like St. John's is, and allow us the ability to innovate and expand and do the very best for our kids would be very helpful.
And so as I always, I look at state government, state legislators will react to one county doing something.
Exactly.
And then whatever that rule that passes, it restricts the other 66 counties, some of which may have needed it and some definitely didn't need it, to that new rule. And, you know, it's like, well, we fixed this, but you may have caused another problem somewhere
exactly.
else. You still had to fix that, but you've now put an extra burden on someone else.
And to, you know, to their credit, they're trying to do their best. And it just sometimes the consequences of a decision are down the road someplace, and you can't always see to the last domino. So
yeah, and I talked to, we're in the building business, and I think Howard White does a phenomenal job running the building department. He's mm-hmm. great at what he does. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, they'll come up with a new inspection or a new rule, and it's because somebody broke a rule. And I'm like, you know, you've now not punished the person that broke the rule. You've punished all the rest of us that weren't breaking
exactly.
the rule, and we have one more step.
Exactly.
So, yes. How would you focus on the budget, or what would you focus on the budget? I mean, there are areas that you feel that the school board can be more efficient with the funds that they have.
Well, that's kind of hard, because we get awards every year for our financial transparency and for the way that we manage our money. Last night, we passed a $1.2 billion budget. So it's kind of takes your breath away when you think about what a big business St. John's County Schools is. Largest employer in the county, over 6,000 employees, about 50,000 kids. So it's a more of a management kind of thing, allocating funds where they can best be used. Mm-hmm. I don't see places necessarily that we can really trim the budget down, but maybe, you know, sometimes shifting emphasis from this place to that one makes it more effective and efficient.
Are you still shutting down some schools during the summer? I know I thought that was a very innovative idea probably mm-hmm. 15, 20 years ago, where you would kind of core all the teachers from an area together in one school, keep that one open, the administrators would pretty much run that, and let the other ones be shut down just from an energy savings during the summer months.
We don't do that, but we've modified that somewhat, because mm-hmm. it got really frustrating, because people needed to be in their buildings, and it frustrated administrators and teachers who like to come in the summer. What we do is the core facilities are open, like the office where parents need to come in and register their children. All the rest of the building is the air conditioning is turned off, except for where the custodians are cleaning that, you know, because they deep clean every summer the entire building. So if they're cleaning in one hallway, air conditioning is running there so that they don't have a heat stroke, and the others are still shut down. So we still get a good cost savings without inconveniencing the whole entire district. one more thing. We also close. Our schools are open 7:30 to 3:30 in the summertime, and the air conditioning is turned off at 2:30. So it encourages people to actually leave at 3:30.
What should our school district do to better prepare students for life as adults?
That's a great question. That's something that we really try to focus on a lot with our career academies that we have, with our pathways to early college for our kids, our pathways to career and technical education, which we're focusing on more and more all the time. What we want to do is graduate kids that are absolutely ready to go to college, if that's their pathway, to go straight into a career prepared, not to go to entry level necessarily, but to maybe go into a little higher paying place. Mm-hmm. Or to go to the military. So we want to prepare our kids to be successful when they graduate, and we focus on that. And I think our emphasis on on relationships with our teachers, having relationships with our kids really helps that. It helps kids clarify what it is they really want to do. And teachers kind of can guide them into, well, maybe if that's what you want to do, look at taking that course and going that direction. So a
micro kind of question, kind of a follow-up, okay. Right? And being in the construction industry, we don't have enough workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a while there was an emphasis that everybody should go to college, and we kind of pulled back nationally doing vocational education. How is St. John's County doing with, you know, the vocational ed and trying to, somebody that says, I don't want to go to college, but I want to be an electrician or a plumber or a carpenter or an AC tech, or I want to go work out at one of the car dealerships. How are you handling that?
We partner with First Coast Technical College, which is now under our umbrella. It was independent, but now it's under our umbrella. And we offer courses to prepare kids in that way. Also, our career academies, they don't just focus on getting kids ready to go to college to be whatever, but they prepare them for entry level all the way to being prepared for post-secondary education. So it was interesting that you asked that question, because I had a gentleman call me the weekend, and he wanted to know, was there any path where we could have pre-apprenticeships for electricians, because he's an electrical contractor. Mm-hmm. And our problem with it is liability insurance, actually. We're looking for a way around that so that we can do that for our kids, because if we can prepare them and get them that training, then they can go straight into a regular apprenticeship when they graduate and be well on their way to a strong career.
Yeah, it's because of that shortage, and there's a lot of data and stats out there, how many workers construction will be short.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two things going on. One, not a lot of people going into the trades, but probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when we had the economic downturn, the mm-hmm. average age of a construction worker in Northeast Florida was 46.
I believe that.
And we've not seen a big influx of young kids to fill that void. So we now have workers that are in their early 60s that have done construction for forever, right? And you know, wages in construction always go up and down.
Right now they're way up
because there's just not enough people to perform all the work.
Supply and demand.
Yes, yes. So anyway, micro would be happy with all that. CRT. Are you familiar with the content, and does it exist in local curriculum? And should it exist?
Well, in the first place, it's illegal in the state of Florida, and mm-hmm. it is not part of our curriculum. Is there a page in some book that might be defined as a CRT? Probably. But we just have to be diligent and be careful with that. It is not part of the curriculum. We do not emphasize CRT. We are not indoctrinating our children. We are not trying to push that at all. In fact, as things pop up, we deal with them, and Mr. Forson is right fast to do that, and our principals are as well.
Okay. Another kind of hot topic, books.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Have you read some of the books that were in question this year at all? Do you think the content is appropriate for students, and if so, why or why not?
I have read some of them. We have had two different public hearings looking at some challenged books. Mm-hmm. And I examine those books in preparation for that. There are passages in those books that absolutely I think are inappropriate for young people. As a matter of fact, one of my colleagues and I voted against retaining them. However, I'm not somebody who wants to willy-nilly ban books. I mean, that's a dangerous thing.
It really is. At the time that was going on, there was a great discussion on the morning show with Pete and Troy and Davey and Clay about all of that. And, you know, on one side, where I would fall is you're trying to protect kids with age-appropriate material. On
right.
the other side, you don't want to outright ban books, but there's just certain books that just aren't age-appropriate.
Well, we've been working hard to try to find a way to thread that needle in putting warnings on those books. And in the last hearing was a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to the media director, and I said, we need to find a way that parents understand which of these books have warnings on them so that they can fill out the form that says that their kids cannot read those books. And so she's pledged to me that she would work with the various schools and on their websites list those books. So parents have more informed opportunity to maybe, you know, they themselves have control over what their kids are being exposed to.
Well, I think it's interesting. In the morning show, you guys kind of touched on this with this topic, right? It's some of the parents that are upset about that will also give their son or daughter an iPad or a phone and never
True.
Pay attention to what
True.
The content is. And, you know, it's... So I think there's a lot there that needs to be done on both sides.
Exactly.
And it's not an easy, you know, as a parent, that's not a...
No.
We didn't have to... My kids all got phones when they were a little bit older, right? They didn't grow up with them when they were 5 and 6 years old. And so it's just a completely different world. And kids are exposed to a lot of different things now.
I know. You know, my own grandchildren, a lot of times, what are you watching? When I see them with one of their devices, mm-hmm. just checking in. And I think that's something parents need to be very diligent to do, is to monitor their kids and their electronic use. Mm-hmm. For one good reason is too much screen time is not good for.
No, you get into. I mean, we're on screen time, right? We're doing a podcast, so people will
right,
watch us
and
on the phone, right?
I'm on the phone all the time.
And,
so,
but at the same time, we probably have. Gone a little bit too much towards that in our society overall, where people would rather do that than get outside and go
right exactly
and engage with people. And you know, I think it's made people a little bit more remote from their neighbors because they're just not outside as much.
Exactly. And parents will be out to dinner and hand their child a device just so they can enjoy a quiet dinner. I mean, it's just It's difficult.
It's one of my pet peeves. It really is. You look over and you see a table of four people and they're on their phone. And it's not just young people with kids.
Oh, you're right.
I've been out to dinner with Darcy and we'll look over and there'll be a couple that's older than us. Yes, listeners, there are couples that are older than Darcy. And they'll both be on their phone the entire time. They'll hardly ever say a word to one another, but they went out to dinner together. And you're like, "Why? Come on."
I know.
You have somebody right next to you. Okay.
Put them down.
Yeah. All right. So this is a little long question.
Okay.
There are many meetings where parents show up overwhelmingly on one side of an issue, right? The showing up in the auditorium on Orange Street doesn't always necessarily represent the majority of parents' feelings on any given issue. What do you think is the best way to judge when the majority of your constituents want, and how much weight do parents' opinions carry when they show up to the school board on a voting issue? I mean, that has to, because you've got phone calls coming in and email. Some of those people may or may not be able to show up to a meeting, but what's seen in the cameras in the meeting is sometimes a large group of people that are upset about a certain issue. So how do you handle that?
Well, it's you know, it's really interesting. I hear what you're saying, but in my experience, I mean, with the things that have been the hot button things that have generated this kind of a response at a meeting have been masks. Have been the books, or the two biggest. Mm-hmm. One of the habits that I have when people are doing public comment, I write their name down, I write with how they feel, and you know, and I look at a thing. And it's amazing. You might have 70 people speak, and sometimes it's 35 to 35. And other times, like the other day we had, then that book, that last book hearing we had 60 public speakers. And there were 12 on one side and 48 on the other. So you have to be able to hear their voices, and you have to then respond in a way that, you know, we're elected to be representatives. We're not elected to, you know, represent ourselves, but rather the people who put us in the office. And so if you've got a 50-50 split, then sometimes you just have to use a lot of discernment to figure out which way to vote.
When they show up to the school board meeting, how long do they get to speak?
3 minutes.
It's the same. I just was curious if it was the same as the county and the city.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not the same throughout the state. In fact, I was just I was in Atlanta at a conference the other day, and some of my colleagues across the state were there, and we were talking about this very issue. And one of them said that it depended on how many speakers there were. If there were a whole lot of speakers, they cut it down to 2 minutes. And if it was getting really long, then they would cut it down to only 30 seconds or something. And they based it on how you might be treated if you go to the legislative the education committee in the legislature. And if there are a lot of speakers, they'll let you Only have about 15 seconds. So, but we don't do that. We give 3 minutes to whoever wants to speak because we want to hear how people feel.
And I think that's how it should be done.
I agree with you.
People are going to take the time to, because your meetings are during the day.
Right.
I think in the morning.
Most of the time, yes, in the morning.
And if somebody's going to take time to be there and someone has to take time off from work.
Or call in.
To me, they should have the ability to have the full.
Exactly. We need to hear what they have to say.
You may be there a long time, but that's what you signed up for. So I'm
exactly.
glad that that's done that way. Yeah. It's to me, that's the only way to go. You guys have had some fairly contentious meetings.
We have.
I would imagine there were years and years where the school board meetings, you had very few people show up and upset, but this past couple of years have been how have you responded to that? I mean, how have you taken all of that?
Well, I feel like everybody needs to be able to say what is on his or her heart. I believe it's your perfect right in our republic here to be able to come and stand, you know, say what you have on your mind and try to influence a vote and try to sway someone's opinion. So it doesn't bother me. I'm happy to hear what anybody has to say. I would prefer that everyone be civil and not sometimes as excited as they are, but that's okay because everybody expresses himself differently, so it's fine.
What do you make of Governor DeSantis' plans to bring in service members as teachers?
I have kind of mixed feelings about that because I think their service gives them a lot of maturity, a lot of experience, a lot that they can bring to the table. But at the same time, if I put on a teacher hat, that is almost an insult that I went and prepared myself, did all the coursework, learned how to deliver instruction and how to do classroom management. And yet, you know, here I'm at the same place. But I think given the fact that across the state we're experiencing, and the nation for that matter, experiencing teacher shortage, it might be a way to mitigate that. But I will tell you that the state sent us this list. I think it had 250 people, military people on it, who wanted to maybe pursue this, and not a single one had applied in St. John's County. So, you know, it just depends.
Well, and yes, if you're going to have a veteran population, we have a large veteran population.
Yes, we do.
But most of the people that retire here are generally a little bit older. Right? I'm not sure that if I was retiring at my age, I would want to start teaching.
But I'll tell you something, we have on our staff, among our teachers, several retired military people and business people who bring their expertise to, and they don't have necessarily an education degree, but they go an alternative route to prepare themselves, and they just bring so much richness to our classrooms. So
you mentioned a couple times, and in this your last answer, shortage of teachers. Mm-hmm. So how is St. John, are we fully staffed at all the schools? Are we short teachers at schools? What's our status right now?
We're still short. Usually by this time, we have a few vacancies scattered widely. Now, almost every school, not everyone, but almost every school has a vacancy or two or three or more. Maybe not teachers, maybe paraprofessionals, and they are essential for the running of our school district. And so it's just something we're fighting. We do things like job fairs. We go to colleges and interview teachers about to graduate. Something innovative that Human Resources is trying this time is to get our teachers who are doing student teaching from the various universities to substitute teach so that they can fill those gaps and then take advantage of our associate teacher program that is unique to St. John's County. It's beautiful and it works so well.
What is that program?
An associate teacher is a fully certified teacher who has all the credentials of any teacher. However, that teacher works alongside a lead teacher in a classroom, and with two adults in the room, two certified teachers in the room, you can have more students than the class size requirements because the ratio is lower. The associate teacher helps in it with instruction, helps maybe with planning, but she doesn't or he doesn't have all the responsibilities of the lead teacher, like parent conferences and that kind of thing. So it a lot of times it's almost like a paid internship. It's somebody fresh out of college. It gives them experience with an experienced teacher to hone their skills before they have their own classroom. Then also the advantage of it is if suddenly your school has grown and you need another classroom and you have to split a class, well, now this class has two teachers in it. Half the kids stay with the veteran teacher and half can go with it. Associate, so they already know and have a relationship with that teacher. It just works out beautifully. And a lot of times we have teachers who are retired who come back and because they just miss teaching, but they don't want all of the administrative pieces of it. So they'll come back and be an associate, and it's a beautiful thing.
We talked a little bit earlier about wages, mm-hmm. right? And beginning teachers now are being paid more money, but that's impacting your scale, mm-hmm. which I've always said every time you give somebody a minimum wage raise, the person most impacted is not the person at the bottom. It's the second and third tier mm-hmm. that are affected because all of a sudden there's not that much separation.
Right.
But the other issue kind of in St. John's County, and it's not just the school board, it's all of us that are employers in the county, is finding affordable housing.
That's the truth.
So how is the school board doing anything to work on that or to try to help teachers? Because I would imagine some of the teachers' salaries, based on what rents and what housing costs are now, it's difficult for those teachers that are moving here, the newer ones, to try to find someplace to live.
We have teachers who drive in from Putnam, who drive in from Flagler, who drive in from Clay for that very, very reason. We talk about it sometimes. It's just difficult in this environment with the richest county in the state of Florida and one of the richest in the United States of America. It's a difficult, mm-hmm. difficult situation. I know the county itself agreed the other day to build some apartments that are more affordable, and I applaud that. Bill Lazar is all the time working to provide affordable housing for people. I applaud that. We kick around sometimes ideas of what maybe we could do, but we haven't come up with a good solution of our own. We'd appreciate your thoughts if you have some.
And I ask you, that's kind of an off subject because it's not the school board's responsibility, but yet it impacts.
But still, yeah.
And all of us are dealing with it. Right? Mm-hmm. And, 2 years ago when you were driving from all of those counties to St. John's County, it wasn't that bad. This year has been a horrible cost in gas.
Truly.
I mean, and so if you're commuting, it costs you a lot more money.
And we've lost support, especially support personnel, to other counties for that reason. Mm-hmm. They can't afford to drive here, so they can go to work for Flagler County or whatever.
Well, and that's the difficulty. If you gave somebody a raise to start 2022, they would have to work 12 months to earn the entire raise. But mm-hmm. because of the inflation pressures we experienced in the first half of the year, and are still experiencing to a large degree now, they haven't earned the raise, but they've already spent the money.
Correct.
Right. It's just a very that's not really a school board. It's just kind of a comment. So, what do you think differentiates you from your opponent in the race?
That's a good question. I told you at the top of this conversation that I've lived here for 43 years. I've worked here. I've served here. I've given my all for the children, especially the children of St. John's County, for the last 20 years. I understand the school district. I worked in it before I was elected. I make it my business to stay up to date and to stay involved and to stay connected. I have good relationships with all my principals and many of my teachers with the end goal of making things better for my children in St. John's County. My opponent, on the other hand, moved to St. John's County in May. She is an intelligent young woman. But she doesn't know St. John's County. She's not lived and worked here. She doesn't know our residents. She doesn't know what St. John's County is all about. I believe that I'm better qualified because of my experience and because of my deep love for St. John's County and for her children.
Is there anything else you want to let people know before we're done?
Sure. If you live in District 1, go to the polls on November 8th and vote for Bev Slough.
All right, and we're going to end the interview here. We've got a few more minutes. I want to end it here because that's all the questions Pete had.
Okay.
And I want to be fair in that where Pete can pull that and get that. But I want to thank you for coming in and doing the interview. But Amanda's here. Amanda's a homeschooler. So I wanted to give Amanda a chance to, if she had any questions about homeschooling or comments in St. John's County. So, Amanda, I'm opening the floor up to you.
All right. So, you mentioned CRT, and CRT is now illegal in Florida. So, teachers can't teach from CRT-infused textbooks. My question to you is, say you have a teacher who feels it's their moral responsibility to teach the lessons derived from CRT, and they decide to integrate worksheets or printouts, or they bring in their own personal books that they're reading. How do you mitigate that? How do you stop potentially an activist teacher from infusing their lessons with CRT, even if it's not in the textbooks?
That's a great question. And I think this happened early in the year, maybe the first or maybe the second day of school. Somebody called me and sent me a worksheet that someone had given to students. And so I just called the superintendent, and he talked to the principal, and that practice stopped that day. So if people let us know, we can work on it and we can mitigate it. But if we don't know, then we can't. And that's kind of a trust thing with you and your child, whether or not your child's going to tell you about it, because it's impossible with over 6,000 employees for someone to be looking over the shoulder of all of them all the time. So for the greatest part, people follow the rules. People do what we ask them to do. But sometimes you just have people that are adamant about what they believe, and they push the buttons. And so you have to be vigilant in that way.
So say you have a teacher that does do that. Now you're in the process of trying to unring a bell. What would be the process as far as mitigating the behavior of that teacher, and or would that teacher get suspended, or what is the process in place?
Well, we do, just like we do progressive discipline with our children in St. John's County, we also do that with our teachers. If someone did something like that and the principal talked to that person and they said, oh, okay, fine, I won't do that anymore, and that's what happened, then we just go along our way. If that person still pushed the envelope and still persisted in that behavior, then maybe they would get reprimanded. And then if they still persist, I mean, it could progress to suspension. It could. Yeah. But that's not been our experience. Usually if someone's confronted with it, then they usually comply with what the expectations are.
Okay. As far as the books, trying to figure out a way to not ban speech, but also allow, I guess, informed consent and empowering parents. Have you ever heard of Dove.org?
No, I haven't.
Dove.org is it's a Christian organization that breaks down to absolute minute detail what is in movies and books.
Okay.
And if you're a parent and you want to try to avoid one type, say bad language, say, you know, whatever it may be, you can go to dove.org and you can look up that piece of media content, and it'll break down almost to a hysterical degree. It'll break down everything. So I was just wondering, rather than just putting a sticker on a book and just trusting that everybody follows the check boxes, maybe flag certain books that, okay, my kid wants to check this book next. Check it out. Now I have to receive a text message. I have to check every single box of, okay, this engages in sexual activity that's rated 13 and up or 17 and up or whatever. This engages in foul language. This has excessive violence. Check off every single one of those boxes before that kid's able to check out that book. Would that be something that could be an option, that sort of proactive communication rather than just sort of a blanket permission form for maybe controversial books, but giving parents a breakdown so they know what they're actually consenting to and they're doing it in real time.
Well, that's very labor intensive what you're describing. However, books with warnings now are going to be identified on school websites. At least I've asked the media director to do that. I hope she follows through, and I will be checking. But also, parents have the ability to see every single book that's in the media center through our library management system. And if they've gone to Dove.org and know they don't want them to watch Pete the Dragon, I made that up, for whatever reason, they don't want them to read that book, then they can say that. And so if a child then pulls it off the shelf and brings it to the checkout desk, when they start, the librarian starts to let them check it out, a flag pops up on the system and says, mom says, don't, you know, let my child check this book out. So there is that ability.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, homeschool mom.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you for telling me about that.
Yes.
Amanda is incredibly well-researched, which I have to work even harder. When Troy was here, I could just bring in the alphabet, and I knew more than Troy. But, I mean, it's just...
That's my boy, Troy. Don't talk about it. You know we're good friends.
I know. He's from the land. We make fun of him. No. So I really appreciate you coming in and doing this. I'm glad that you...
Oh, enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, come back after the election. If you have things that are going on the school board, let us know.
Okay.
I have joked, you guys, if you've watched politics and boards in St. John's County, there's always one board that seems to struggle through periods, right? Not, and sometimes it's the people on the board. Sometimes it's the issues the board is dealing with. Sometimes it's just the people that show up to those meetings, right? And I think the school board has had the hardest time the last probably year and a half, and probably more contentious than anyone else. I mean, for a while, the city of St. Augustine had that award. St. Augustine had that for a while.
South Beach.
Yeah, the mosquito control had it for a long time. Right?
Yes, I mean, they did.
I mean, so I, you know, and I do hope that when people show up those meetings, that they're respectful of everyone.
For the biggest, I mean, almost all are. Mm-hmm. It's just one or two.
Yeah, and I think you hit on it when you said some people just have a, I think some people express themselves a little more easier than others.
Mm-hmm.
And some, the way they express them, it's not what they say, it's just how they say it.
Exactly, exactly. If you can do, you know, dignity and respect and, mm-hmm. you know, get along all a right. lot better.
Well, thank you. Good luck in the campaign.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
And thanks for coming in. Hopefully we'll see you back.
I'll be happy to come anytime you want me to.
Right. This is St. Augustine This Evening with Mike Davis, and we will be back tomorrow night.